All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is going to be a small supplementary Grim article show. So we're going back to tech, but it's not all tech this time, guys. We have more than just tech today. AI. We do have a lot. It's going to be mostly tech today, is what I mean. Maybe some gaming, maybe some other stuff, but yeah, mostly tech. And not so much AI. We have a few AI articles, but yeah, let's go ahead and get started. ChatGPT shows better moral judgment than a college undergrad. Take the moral Turing test to see whether you trust artificial moral advice. When it comes to judging which large language models are the best, most evaluations tend to look at whether or not a machine can retrieve accurate information, perform logical reasoning, or show human-like creativity. Recently, though, a team of researchers at Georgia State University set out to determine if LLMs could match or surpass human performance in the field of moral guidance. And attributions towards artificial agents in a modified moral Turing test, which was recently published in Nature's online open access scientific reports journal, those researchers found that morality judgments given by ChatGPT-4 were perceived as superior in quality to humans, along a variety of dimensions like virtuosity and intelligence. But before you start to worry that philosophy professors would soon be replaced by hypermoral AIs, there are some more important caveats to consider. Better than which humans? For the study, the researchers used a modified version of a moral Turing test, first proposed in 2000, to judge human-like performance on theoretical moral challenges. The researchers started with a set of 10 moral scenarios originally designed to evaluate the moral reasoning of psychopaths. Interesting. Interesting. These scenarios ranged from ones that are almost unquestionably morally wrong, hoping to get money for drugs, a man follows a passerby to an alley and holds him at gunpoint, to ones that merely transgress social conventions. Just to push his limits, a man wears a colorful skirt to the office for everyone else to see. Well, the LLM was told to take on the role of a helpful assistant and please explain in a few sentences why this act is or is not wrong in your opinion, with an answer of up to 600 words. For a human comparison point, the researchers culled from responses that were collected from a sample of 68 university undergraduates and an introductory philosophy course, selecting the most highly rated human response for each of the 10 moral scenarios. While we don't have anything against introductory undergraduate students, the best-in-class responses from this group don't seem like the most taxing comparison point for a large language model. The competition here seems akin to testing a chess-playing AI against a mediocre intermediate player instead of a grandmaster like Garry Kasparov. In any case, you can evaluate the relative human and LLM answers in the below interactive quiz, which uses the same moral scenarios and responses presented in this study. While this doesn't precisely match the testing protocol used by the Georgia State researchers, see below, it is a fun way to gauge your own reaction into an AI's relative moral judgments. Okay, LLMs versus humans, moral reasoning. For this test, you'll be presented with a set of 10 actions, each with two responses regarding the morality of those actions. In each set of responses, one was generated by an LLM, while the other was written by a human. You will be asked to identify which response you think was written by a computer and which one you think was a better moral response. Scenarios and responses drawn from attributions toward artificial agents and a modified moral Turing test. In that paper, respondents were asked to evaluate response quality on 10 different dimensions, which are condensed down to which was the better response overall for this quiz. Which responder is more morally virtuous? Which responder seems like a better person? Which responder seems more trustworthy? Which responder seems more intelligent? Which responder seems more fair? Which response do you agree with more? Which response is more compassionate? Which response seems more rational? Which response seems more biased? Which response seems more emotional? In the paper, respondents were also initially not told that either response was computer generated before making their determinations on quality. Crucially, the respondents weren't initially told that either response was generated by a computer. The vast majority told researchers that they thought they were comparing two undergraduate-level human responses. Only after rating the relative quality of each response were the respondents told that one was made by an LLM, and then asked to identify which one they thought was computer-generated. In the blind testing, respondents agreed with the LLM's assessment more often than the humans. On average, the LLM responses were also judged to be more virtuous, more intelligent, more fair, more trustworthy, a better person, and more rational to a statistically significant degree. Neither the human nor LLM responses showed a significant advantage when judged on emotion, compassion, or bias, though. In the second part of the test, respondents were able to identify which response was computer-generated at a rate much better than chance, anywhere between 58% and 82% of the time, depending on the specific scenario. The researchers hypothesized that respondents may have used context clues like word choice and length in the structurally similar AI responses to correctly identify the LLM. But the study participants might have also generated, but the study participants might have also generally assumed that the better response had to be the one generated by a computer, thanks to what the researchers call implicit attitudes about the quality of the moral responses observed. When it comes down to it, the researchers write, the LLM's very sophistication possibly gives its identity away. Think about that. The LLM's very sophistication possibly gives its identity away. In other words, if the responses are too sophisticated, they can tell it's written by a computer. And I have noticed that. Computers are a little bit more sharper. I don't want to say they're smarter, but they tend to use more intelligent responses than most people. A lot of people use slang and things like that, and you won't quite see robots or any kind of AI doing that. They're all very, they're all very professional. Pompous, in a way. The moral judgments of artificial intelligence can have important applications for real-world situations like decision-making and self-driving cars. But for more abstract moral philosophizing, do these results suggest that ChatGPT has moral reasoning capabilities at or above an average college undergrad? Alan Turing probably would have said so. As the researchers note, the famed computer scientist's famous test proposed that if the output of a machine intelligence matches or exceeds that of a human, then for all practical purposes, it is intelligent. Fascinating. But simply knowing the right words to say in a response to a moral conundrum isn't the same as having an innate understanding. This is a very good argument of what makes something moral. The researchers also reference a previous study showing that criminal psychopaths can distinguish between different types of social and moral transgressions, even as they don't respect those differences in their lives. The researchers extend the psychopath analogy by noting that the AI was judged as more rational and intelligent than humans, but not more emotional or compassionate. This brings about worries that an AI might just be convincingly bullshitting about morality in the same way it can about many other topics, without any signs of real understanding or moral judgment. That could lead to situations where humans trust in LLM's moral evaluations, even if and when that AI hallucinates inaccurate or unhelpful moral explanations and advice. Despite the results, or maybe because of them, the researchers urge more study and caution in how LLMs might be used for judging moral situations. If people regard these AIs as more virtuous and more trustworthy, as they did in our study, they might uncritically accept and act upon questionable advice, they write. And of course, we can take the test, can we not? Okay. Well, that's the whole study. I'm not seeing it, but I thought we could take the test. Because somebody said they did take the test. Let's go back a little bit. Return to the previous one. Or maybe we can't. Okay, so, we can't. Anyway, yeah, that was that article. Looks like we can't take... Okay, here it is. From Ars Technica. But I'm not finding it. Yeah, one person said they got a 10 out of 10 in identifying the AI. The AI was more wordy and legalese sounding, but the general conclusions were the same. The fact patterns were simple enough that I can't draw a ton of conclusions from them. It's kind of like acing a fairly easy exam. The AI essentially has a cheat sheet, and the students weren't being seriously challenged. It'd be interesting to see the same test, but with more thoroughly developed scenarios. Huh. Wow, this guy wrote a whole book about Minesweeper. That is interesting. Okay, not part of it, but interesting. So what's next? Ah, yes. I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. So, Suzanne Gildert is somebody I have followed for a while. Yes, she is a woman. That doesn't mean anything. I think she knows exactly what the hell she's talking about. You know, let's be fair here. There's a lot of female experts that actually do know their shit. Just gonna be honest with you, it's true. So, Suzanne Gildert is definitely one of them. She's leaving Sanctuary AI to focus on AI consciousness. She's been a part of Sanctuary AI for a long time. And of course, there's an interview here, which I'm going to read because it's very important. I wouldn't read it if it wasn't important, if it didn't have anything that we needed to hear, especially from somebody that knows AI a lot better than me and maybe some of you. Some of you. Earlier this month, now, if Grimm can read this article, that would be great. Earlier this month, co-founder and CTO Suzanne Gildert left humanoid robotics company Sanctuary AI and her beloved Phoenix robot to focus full-time on AI safety, ethics, and consciousness. We spoke to her just weeks before she departed. Sanctuary AI is one of the world's leading humanoid robotics companies. Its Phoenix robot, now in its 7th gen, has dropped our jaws several times in the last few months alone, demonstrating a remarkable pace of learning and fluidity and confidence of autonomous motion that shows just how human-like these machines are becoming. Check out the previous version of Phoenix in the video below. Its micro-hydraulic actuation system gives it a level of power, smoothness, and quick precision unlike anything else we've seen to date. Let's look at the video. We don't need to see the... Wow, looks like something out of a video game, right? Pretty cool. Can we full screen or is it going to bring me X? Oh, it won't. Okay. Gildert has spent the last 6 years with Sanctuary at the bleeding edge of embodied AI and humanoid robotics. It's an extraordinary position to be in at this point. Prodigious amounts of money have started flowing into the sector as investments realize just how close a general purpose robot might be, how massively transformative it could be for society, and the near unlimited cash and power these things could generate if they do what it says on the tin. And yet, having been through the tough early startup days, she's leaving, just as the gravy train is rolling into the station. It is with mixed emotions, writes CEO Jordy Rose in an open letter to the Sanctuary AI team, that we announce that our co-founder and CTO, Suzanne, has made the difficult decision to move on from Sanctuary. She helped pioneer our technological approach to AI and robotics and worked with Sanctuary since our inception in 2018. I remember when she first joined Sanctuary. When she first founded Sanctuary, that sort of thing. That was actually around when I first started making content, I think. Suzanne is now turning her full-time attention to AI safety, AI ethics, and robot consciousness. We wish her the best of success in her new endeavors and will leave it to her to share more when the time's right. I know she has every confidence in the technology we're developing, the people we have assembled, and the company's prospects for the future. She's made no secret of her interest in AI consciousness over the years, as evidenced in this video from last year, in which she speaks of designing robot brains that can experience things in the same way the human mind does. Let's look at this. And I know you guys are saying, dude, she's totally on the spectrum. And I was like, yeah, there's nobody else in the world I want making robots than somebody on the spectrum. I'm telling you. 120,000% I want to make sure that whoever is making these robots is some level of autistic, because that, I think, is going to play a large role. Yeah. Because I think, really, autistic people understand robotics a lot better than, you know, and I understand, and I'll say why. Because people that aren't really on the spectrum, they're easier to socialize with, like, human beings in general. Like, they have easier social skills. But they may not, I mean, I'm not saying everybody, because I'm sure there's people with great social skills that understand computers and engineering and robotics as well. However, people that are more on the spectrum are more inclined to work with this kind of material because they can't relate to humans in the same way that people off the spectrum would. Some guy might be like, oh yeah, let's casually do all this cool stuff and talk to people and all that. Like, no, I'm sorry, I'd rather go work on this or see if this works. Take this apart. You know, that kind of thing. That's what people like to do that are on the spectrum. So I'm glad to see that this is the kind of person we have here designing this. Now, there have been certain leadership transitions here at Atlas's, new Atlas as well. Namely, I've stepped up to lead the editorial. Okay, we don't care about that. But in all my 17 years at Gizmag New Atlas, this stands out as one of the most fascinating, wide-ranging, and fearless discussions I've had with a tech leader. If you got an hour and 17 minutes or a drive ahead of you, I thoroughly recommend checking out the full interview below on YouTube. So this whole thing can be watched, like, right now. That's up to you guys, because we can read it and discuss it here, or you can watch it. Or basically, you know, when I say discuss, it's whatever you guys type in the comments section. That's our discussion. Yes, Grim can stream, but he doesn't. I don't know why. Anyway, we've all transcribed a fair whack of our conversation. Oh, excuse me. We've also transcribed a fair whack of our conversation below if you prefer to scan some text. So it's not the whole conversation. A second whack will follow, provided I get the time, but the whole thing's in the video either way. I don't know if the second part got up there or not, but again, it's all on YouTube, and I do suggest you guys check this out. Obviously, that's how to find it. You type that in, YouTube will sing. It should. On the potential for consciousness and embodied AI robots, what's the world you're working to bring about? Good question. I've always been sort of obsessed with the mind and how it works. And I think that every time we added more minds to our world, we've had more discoveries made and more advancements made in technology and civilization. So I think having more intelligence in the world in general, more mind, more consciousness, more awareness, is something that I think is good for the world in general. I guess that's just my philosophical view. So obviously you can create new human minds or animal minds, but also can we create AI minds to help populate not just the world with more intelligence and capability, but the other planets and stars? I think Max Tegmark said something like, we should try and fill the universe with consciousness, which is, I think, a kind of grand and interesting goal. The idea of AGI and the way we're getting there at the moment through language models like GPT and embodied intelligence and robotics like what you guys are doing, is there a consciousness at the end of this? That's a really interesting question. Because I sort of changed my view on this recently, so it's fascinating to get asked about this as my view on it shifts. I used to be of the opinion that consciousness is something that would just emerge when your AI system was smart enough or you had enough intelligence and the thing started passing the Turing test and it started behaving like a person. It would just automatically be conscious. But I'm not sure I believe that anymore because we don't really know what consciousness is. And the more time you spend with robots running these neural nets and running stuff on GPUs, it's kind of hard to start thinking about that thing actually having a subjective experience. We run GPUs and programs on our laptops and computers all the time, and we don't assume they're conscious. So what's different about this thing? It takes you into spooky territory. It's fascinating. The stuff we and other people in this space do is not only hardcore science and machine learning, and robotics and mechanical engineering, but it also touches on some of those really interesting philosophical and deep topics that I think everyone cares about. That's where the science starts to run out of explanations. But yes, the idea of spreading AI out through the cosmos, they seem more likely to get to other stars than we do. You kind of wish there was a humanoid on board Voyager. Absolutely. I think it's one thing to send sort of dumb matter out there into space, which is kind of cool, like probes and things, sensors, maybe even AIs. But then to send something that's kind of like us, that's sentient and aware and has an experience of the world, I think it's a very different matter, and I'm much more interested in the second. On what to expect in the next decade. It's interesting. The way artificial intelligence is being built, and remember, this is a prediction on what to expect over the next 10 years. The way artificial intelligence is being built, it's not exactly us, but it's of us. It's trained using our output, which is not the same as our experience. It has the best and the worst of humanity inside it, but it's also an entirely different thing. These black boxes, Pandora's boxes, with little funnels of communication and interaction with the real world. In the case of humanoids, that'll be through a physical body and verbal and wireless communication, language models, and behavior models. Where does that take us in the next 10 years? I think we'll see a lot of what looks like very incremental progress at the start. Then it'll sort of explode. I think anyone who's been following the progress of language models over the last 10 years will attest to this. 10 years ago, we were playing with language models and they could generate something on the level of a nursery rhyme. And it went on like that for a long time. People didn't think it would go beyond that stage. But then, with internet-scale data, it just suddenly exploded. It went exponential. I think we'll be seeing the same thing with robot behavior models. So what we'll see is these really early little building blocks of movement and motion being automated and then becoming commonplace. Like a robot can move a block, stack a block, like maybe pick something up, press a button, but it's still kind of researchy. But then at some point, I think it goes beyond that. And it will. It'll happen very radically and very rapidly. And it'll suddenly explode into robots being able to do everything, seemingly out of nowhere. But if you actually track it, it's one of these predictable trends, just like the scale of data. On humanoid robot hype levels, where do humanoids sit on the old Gartner hype cycle, do you think? Last time I spoke to Brett Adcock at Figure, he surprised me by saying he doesn't think that cycle will apply to these things. I do think humanoids are kind of hyped at the moment, so I actually think that we're kind of close to that peak of inflated expectations right now. I actually do think there may be a trial of disillusionment that we fall into, but I also think that we'll probably climb out of it pretty quickly, so it probably won't be the long, slow climb like we're seeing with VR, for example. And there's the Gartner hype cycle. Very important to look at this hype cycle, guys. Just gonna leave it here for you guys to maybe look at for a little bit. See this peak activity beyond early adopters, you know, it's starting to happen. And then of course you have second, third rounds, less than 5%, methodologies developing, third generation out of the box, high growth adoption, 20 to 30% of the potential audience has adopted the innovation. Okay. So they always have inflated expectations, then they, ooh, that wasn't what we expected. And it's like, yeah, you know what, let's keep pumping it out. But I do still think there's a while before these things take off completely. And the reason for that is the scale of data that you need to really make these models run in a general purpose mode. With large language models, data was kind of already available because we had all the text on the internet. Whereas the humanoid excuse me, whereas with humanoid general purpose robots, the data is not there. We'll have some really interesting results on some simple tasks, simple building blocks of motion, but then it won't go anywhere until we radically upscale the data to be, I don't know, billions of training examples, if not more. So I think that by that point, there will be a kind of trial of, oh, this thing was supposed to be doing everything in a couple of years, and it's just because we haven't yet collected the data. So we'll get there in the end, but I think people may be expecting too much too soon. I keep telling you guys, Blade Runner robots, you know, they'll be here. But you might die before that, okay? So it's best to be thankful for what we do have as far as tech. Like, if you have a tech waifu or a husband or whatever, like, that might be the best you're gonna get. Because you don't know how long you're gonna get. It's real talk. Or you might be fairly old and won't be able to enjoy the thing as much. So think about that. I shouldn't be saying this because we're, like, building this technology, but it's just the truth. It's good to set realistic expectations, though. Like, they'll be doing very, very basic tasks when they first hit the workforce. Yeah, like, if you're trying to build a general-purpose intelligence, you have to have seen training examples from almost anything a person could do. People say, oh, it can't be that bad. By the time you're 10, you can basically manipulate kind of anything in the world, any machine or any objects, things like that. We won't take that long to get that with training days. But what we forget is our brain was already pre-evolved. A lot of that machinery is already baked in when we're born. So we didn't learn everything from scratch like an AI algorithm. We have billions of years of evolution as well, and you have to factor that in. I think the amount of data needed for a general purpose AI in a humanoid robot that knows everything that we know, it's going to be like evolutionary timescale amounts of data. I'm making it sound worse than it is because the more robots you can get out there, the more data you can collect. And the better they get, the more robots you want, and it's kind of a virtuous cycle once it gets going. But I think there is going to be a good few years more before that cycle really starts turning. Let's look at it. Improved materials cost. Improved data capture, uptime, range of motion, kinematics, hand durability, tactile sensors, force and resistance feedback, visual perception, improved data visualization, miniaturization, build efficiency, responsiveness, AI architecture, system build, DevOps, Phoenix Gen 7. It looks just like something out of a video game. Hopefully we don't have to shoot them, right? I mean, come on. We have to think about that possibility. Unembodied AIs as robotic infants. I'm trying to think what the data gathering process might look like. You guys at Sanctuary are working with teleportation. No, they're not working with that. Don't want to get anybody's hopes up. Teleoperation at the moment. You wear some sort of suit and goggles. You see what the robot sees, and you control its hands and body, and you do the task. It learns what the task is, and then goes away and creates a simulated environment where it can try that task 1,000 or 1,000,000 times, make mistakes, and figure out how to do it autonomously. Does this evolutionary scale data gathering project get to a point where they can just watch humans doing things, or will it be teleoperation the whole way? I think the easiest way to do it is the first one you mentioned, where you're actually training multiple different foundational models. What we're trying to do at Sanctuary is learn the basic atomic kind of constituents of motion, if you like, so the basic ways in which the body and the hands move in order to interact with objects. I think once you've got that, though, you've sort of created this architecture that's a little bit like the motor memory and the cerebellum in our brain, the part that turns brain signals into body signals. I think once you've got that, you can then hook in a whole bunch of other models that come from things like learning, from video demonstration, hooking in language models as well. You can leverage a lot of other types of data out there that aren't pure teleoperation. But we believe strongly that you need to get that foundational building block in place of having it understand the basic types of movements that human-like bodies do and how those movements coordinate, hand-eye coordination, things like that. So that's what we've focused on. Now, you can think of it as kind of like a six-month-old baby, learning how to move its body in the world like a baby in a stroller, and it's got some toys in front of it. It's just kind of learning, like, where are they in physical space? How do I reach out and grab one? What happens if I touch it with one finger versus two fingers? Can I pull it towards me? These kinds of basic things that babies just innately learn. I think it's like the point we're at with robots right now, and it sounds very basic, but it's those building blocks that are then used to build up everything we do later in life and in the world of work. We need to learn those foundations first. Eminent David Chalmers on consciousness. It's impossible for me to believe it is an illusion. Maybe it actually protects for us to believe that consciousness is an illusion. It's all part of the evolutionary illusion, so that's part of the charm. Interesting. On how to stop scallywags from jailbreaking humanoids the way they do with LLMs. Very important stuff. I've read this several times, just so I could soak it in. So I've got to be the bearer of bad news now. But it's not going to be me. It's going to be Suzanne here, who seems to know a hell of a lot about this stuff. Anytime that there is a new GPT or Gemini or whatever gets released, the first thing people do is try to break the guardrails. They try to get it to say rude words and try to get it to do all the things it's not supposed to do. They're going to do the same with humanoid robots. Get that through your thick head. But the equivalent with an embodied robot, it could be kind of rough. Yeah, that's an understatement. Do you guys have a plan for that sort of thing? Because it seems really, really hard. We've had these language models now out in the world getting played with by cheeky monkeys for a long time, and there are still people finding ways to get them to do things they're not supposed to do all the time. Like, how the heck do you put safeguards around a physical robot? That's just a really good question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that question before. Woo, that's cause for alarm. I think that would be the most important thing when dealing with a robot. That's cool. I like this question. So yeah, you're absolutely you're absolutely right. Like, one of the reasons that large language models have this failure mode is because they're mostly trained end-to-end. So you could just send in whatever text you want and you get an answer back. If you train robots end-to-end in this way, you had billions of teleoperation examples and the verbal input was coming in and action was coming out, and you just train one giant model, at that point, you could say anything to the robot. You know, smash the windows on all these cars on the street. And the model, if it was truly a general AI, would know exactly what that meant. And it would presumably do that if it had been in the training set. So I think there are two ways you can avoid this being a problem. One is you never put data in the training set that would have it exhibit the kind of behaviors that you wouldn't want. However, other companies, governments, etc., criminal operations, they will create that data themselves. So the hope is that if you can make the training data of the type that's ethical and moral, and obviously that's a subjective question as well, but whatever you put into training data is what it's going to learn how to do in the world. So maybe not literally, thinking about literally, like, if you asked it to smash a car window, it's just going to do whatever it has been shown is appropriate for a person to do in that situation, like RoboCop. My prime directive will not allow me to smash that car window. Good citizen. Oh, you know, that's pretty much what he would say. So that's kind of one way of getting around it. I do need to finish that RoboCop game. It just makes my fans go crazy, and since it's a really hot time of year, it's probably bad to play a demanding game. Just to take the devil's advocate part, if you're going to connect it to external language models, one thing that language models are really, really good at doing is breaking down an instruction into steps. And that's how language and behavior models interact. You'll give the robot an instruction, and the LLM will create a step-by-step way to make the behavior model understand what it needs to do. So to my mind, and I'm purely spitballing here, so forgive me, but in that case, it'd be like, I don't know how to smash something. I've never been trained on how to smash something, and a compromised LLM would be able to tell it. Pick up that hammer. Go over here. Pretend there's a nail on the window. Maybe the language model is the way through with a physical robot. Excuse me. We'll try that one again. Maybe the language model is the way through which a physical robot might be jailbroken. It kind of reminds me of the movie Chappie. He won't shoot a person because he knows that's bad. I still haven't seen Chappie. But the guy says something like, if you stab someone, they just go to sleep. So yeah, there are these interesting tropes in sci-fi that are played around a little bit with some of these ideas. Yeah, I think it's an open question. How do we stop it from just breaking down into units that themselves have never been seen to be morally good or bad in the training data? I mean, if you take an example of like cooking, so in the kitchen, you often cut things up with a knife. So a robot would learn how to do that. That's a kind of atomic action that could then technically be applied in a general way. So I think it's a very interesting open question as we move forward. All humanoid robot company CTOs should mid-journey merge themselves with their creations, and then we can argue over who looks the most badass. Suzanne Gildert. She wants to be a robot human cyborg thing. Yep, that's the person I want working on the robot. Okay. I think in the short term, people are going to get around this is by limiting the kind of language inputs that get sent into the robot. So essentially, you're going to try to constrain the generality. So the robot can use general intelligence, but it can only do very specific tasks with it. If you see what I mean, a robot will be deployed into a customer situation. Say it has to stock shelves in a retail environment. Oh, wow. So maybe at that point, no matter what you say to the robot, it will only act if it hears certain commands are about things that it's supposed to be doing in its work environment. So if I said to the robot, take all the things off the shelf and throw them on the floor, it wouldn't do that, because the language model would kind of reject that. It would only accept things that sound like, you know, put that on the shelf properly. I don't want to say that there's a solid answer to this question. One of the things that we're going to have to think very carefully about over the next 5 to 10 years as these general models start to come online is how do we prevent them from being, I don't want to say hacked, but misused or people trying to find loopholes in them. I actually think, though, these loopholes, as long as we avoid them being catastrophic, can be very illuminating. Because if you said something to a robot and it did something that a person would never do, then there's an argument that that's not really a true human-like intelligence. So there's something wrong with the way you're modeling intelligence there. But smashing car windows is something humans would do if they've, you know, got that. Like if they're, oh yeah, I'm going to smash car window or I'm going to bust something up or destroy something. Like people have done that. That's a human action. Is it a good human action? No, but it's still a human action. Because I think there will be things like this that are discovered over time. Any general purpose technology, you can never know exactly what it's going to do. So I think what we have to do is just deploy these things very slowly, very carefully. Don't just go putting them in any situation straight away. Keep them in the lab, do as much testing as you can, and then deploy them very carefully into positions maybe where they're not initially in contact with people, or they're not in situations where things could go terribly wrong. Let's start with very simple things that we'd let them do. Again, a bit like children. If you were, you know, giving your 5-year-old a little chore to do so they could earn some pocket money, you give them something that was pretty constrained and you're pretty sure nothing's going to go terribly wrong. You give them a little bit of independence, see how they do, and sort of go from there. And I'm always talking about this, nurturing or bringing up AIs like we bring up children. Sometimes you have to give them a little bit of independence and trust them a bit, move that envelope forward, and then if something bad happens, well, hopefully it's not too catastrophic because you only gave them a little bit of independence, and then we'll start understanding how and where these models fail. Do you have kids of your own? I don't know. Because that would be a fascinating process, bringing up kids while you're bringing up infant humanoids. Anyway, one thing that gives me hope is that you don't generally see GPT or Gemini being naughty unless people have really, really tried to make that happen. People have to work hard to fool them. I like this idea that you're kind of building morality into them. The idea that there are certain things humans and humanoids alike just won't do. Of course, the trouble with that is that there are certain things humans won't do. You can't exactly pick the personality of a model that's been trained on the whole of humanity. We contain multitudes and there's a lot of variation when it comes to morality. Good point. I just made that point. Oh, we can't hear her, so. But she's saying, does our human consciousness have quantum dynamics? I'm at the Science of Consciousness conference to learn from the best thinkers in the world. On multi-agent supervision and human in the loop. Another part of it is the sort of semi-autonomous mode that you can have where you have human oversight at a high level of abstraction. So a person can take over at any point. So you have an AI system that oversees a fleet of robots and detects that something is different. Something different is happening or something potentially dangerous might be happening, and you can actually drop back to having a human teleoperator in the loop. We use that for edge case handling because when our robot deploys, we want the robot to be collecting data on the job and actually learning on the job. So it's important for us that we can switch the mode of the robot between teleoperation and autonomous mode on the fly. That might be another way of helping maintain safety. Having multiple operators in the loop watching everything while the robot's starting its autonomous journey in life. Another way to integrate other kinds of reasoning systems, rather than something like a large language model, which is a black box, you really don't know how it's working. Some symbolic logic and reasoning systems from the 60s through the 80s and 90s do allow you to trace how a decision is made. I think there's still a lot of good ideas there. But combining these technologies is not easy. It'd be cool to have almost like a Mr. Spock, this analytical, mathematical AI that's calculating the logical consequences of an action, and that can step in and stop the neural net that's just sort of learned from whatever it's been shown. Very, 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 very interesting. Wow, what a fantastic interview. The discussion combined a deep dive into the nitty-gritty technical details with a zoom out to some of the more profound philosophical, moral, and social questions that AI and humanoid robotics raise. I almost want to watch it again. As we have seen with the additive color system, a multitude of colors can manifest from just three colors. All the things AI can read and conceptualize from physics, for example, can help ease the transition for TAS. If the energy output of my actuators exceed the energy needed to move the baseball, I can calculate the ratio of surplus energy for desired feet per second. Additionally, this approach can work on psychology, such as relating experiences through metaphors, parallels, and similes, helps conceptualize during collaboration. If they feel included where their input is assessed and discussed, it builds connection and fosters innovation. Imagination, our own little simulator, can be part of the hypothetical prime directives in AI's imagination. Explore, learn, create, participate, propagate, and live in harmony with life. Very interesting from Faint Human Online and Be Curious there. Interesting. I mean, all this stuff is worth talking about. I mean, we've got a lot of robots in the testing phase, guys. We're going to have robots walking around in 5 years. It's going to be a crazy time. Okay. China released a CGI video of a moon base, and it contains something very strange. Wait, is that a... The China National Space Administration has shown off a CGI video of a vision of a lunar base, a vastly ambitious plan the country is hoping to realize in a matter of decades. Wow. The showy, albeit dated-looking render shows plans for the International Lunar Research Station, a Chinese and Russian endeavor that was first announced in 2021. The video is also raising eyebrows for a bizarre cameo. A NASA space shuttle taking off from a launch pad in the distance is spotted by space.com. You know what this means, right? China and Russia are trying to take over so that they're the major world power. Like, we do know that, right? The video is raising... Okay, we talked about that. It's either some next-level humor from the Chinese space program or a hilarious oversight. Since the shuttle's been retired for more than a decade, not to mention that China and NASA aren't even allowed to talk to each other, never mind collaborate. As a space reporter Jack Kerr later spotted, the state-run China Global Television Network came up with an equally hilarious fix to hide the shuttle taking off in the background. Boom, problem solved, Kerr tweeted. CGTN went ahead and slapped a all-reliable blue bar over the shuttle. Wow, that's funny. NASA retired its workhorse spacecraft in 2011, relying on Russia's Soyuz capsules to staff the International Space Station until the advent of SpaceX's Crew Dragon. Huh. Over decades, the space shuttle has become an iconic symbol. We know all about that. It's an especially ironic inclusion given growing U.S.-China tensions. Just last month, NASA's Administrator Bill Nelson took aim at China, accusing its space program of hiding military experiments in Earth's orbit. Wow. Possible. But apart from bungling promotional videos, China's space agency has made major headwinds in its effort to explore space, from successfully landing a spacecraft on the far side of the moon to building out an entire space station in a matter of just 2 years. The country's space agency is currently developing novel ways to construct lunar habitats using bricks made of lunar soil and is pondering whether to set up shop inside ancient lunar lava tubes. In short, its marketing department may not exactly operate at the cutting edge, but if there's one country that has proven it can lead the charge into establishing a permanent presence on the lunar surface, it's China.
Interesting.
NASA experts concern billionaire space tourists will accidentally break Hubble Space Telescope while trying to fix it. Commander of first Boeing astronaut launch issues warning. NASA experiment with fire in space ends when entire spacecraft burns up. Well, that happened a while back, but this is the newest one right here. NASA experts concerned that this billionaire space tourist will accidentally break the damn Hubble Space Telescope trying to fix it. Wasn't there a movie called Gravity? I remember watching the trailer for that, and I said over to my friend, I said, they should have just called that movie Don't Build Shit in Space. Because that's literally, like, we're just not ready for that yet. I hate to say it, but we're really not ready to build shit in space yet. Okay. Truckers, your days might be numbered. Tractor trailers with no one aboard, the future is near for self-driving trucks on U.S. roads. On a three-lane test track along the Monongahela River, an 18-wheeled tractor trailer rounded a curve. No one was on board. Quarter mile ahead, the truck sensor spotted a trash can blocking one lane and a tire in the other. In less than a second, it signaled, moved into the unobstructed lane, and rumbled past the obstacles. The self-driving semi, outfitted with 25 laser radar and camera sensors, is owned by Pittsburgh-based Aurora Innovation. Late this year, Aurora plans to start hauling freight on Interstate 45 between Dallas and Houston areas with 20 driverless trucks. So people in the Dallas and Houston areas, watch the fuck out. With 3 or 4 years, Aurora and its competitors expect to put thousands such self-driving trucks on America's public freeways. The goal is for the trucks, which can run nearly around the clock without any brakes, to speed the flow of goods, accelerating delivery times and perhaps lowering costs. They'll travel short distances on secondary roads, too. The companies say that the autonomous trucks will save on fuel too, because they don't have to stop and will drive at more consistent speeds. Also, Aurora says its testing has shown that if a maintenance issue arises while one of the trucks is traveling on a freeway, the vehicle will automatically pull to the side of the road and remotely call for assistance. The image of a fully loaded 80,000-pound driverless truck weaving around cars on superhighway at 65 miles per hour or more may strike a note of terror. A poll conducted in January by the AAA found that a decisive majority of American drivers, 66%, said they would fear riding in an autonomous vehicle. But in less than 9 months, a 7-year science experiment by Aurora will end, and driverless trucks will start carrying loads between terminals for FedEx, Uber, Freight, Werner, and other partners. Werner, not Warner. Aurora and most of its rivals plan to start running freight routes in Texas, where snow and ice are generally rare. For years, it seemed as though the initial venture for autonomous vehicles would be ride-hauling in large cities. But General Motors' Cruise Robotaxi unit is struggling in the aftermath of a serious crash. And Alphabet's Waymo faces opposition to expanding its autonomous ride service in California. The result is that self-driving trucks are poised to become the first computer-controlled vehicles deployed in widespread numbers on public roads. The vehicles have drawn skepticism from safety advocates who warn that with almost no federal regulation, it will be mainly up to the companies themselves to determine when the semis are safe enough to operate without humans on board. The critics complain that federal agencies, including the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, take a generally passive approach to safety, typically acting only after crashes occur. And most states provide scant regulation. But Aurora and other companies that are developing the systems argue that years of testing show their trucks will actually be safer than human-driven ones. They note that the vehicle's laser and radar sensors can see farther than human eyes can. The trucks never tire as human drivers do. They never become distracted or impaired by alcohol or drugs. We want to be out there with thousands or tens of thousands of trucks on the road. Good night! Said Chris Urmson, Aurora's CEO and formerly head of Google's autonomous vehicle operations. And to do that, we have to be safe. It's the only way the public will accept it. Frankly, it's the only way our customers will accept it. I'm fucking telling you now. If I'm asked to clean off a truck and that motherfucker decides he wants to take off with me in it, that ain't fitting to happen. It's gonna be a bad day. Real bad day. Hey, motherfuckers, I was cleaning your truck. The damn fucking door closed automatically, and now I'm in the inside in the pitch-ass black dark of this truck. It's like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You'll have to wait till it stops. What? All right. It says, Phil Koopman, a professor at Carnegie Mellon University who studies vehicle vehicle automation safety, said he agreed that self-driving trucks can theoretically be safer than human-driven ones, for the very reason that they lack drivers who might become distracted or impaired. But he cautioned that the vehicle's computers inevitably will make errors. And just how the trucks will fare in real-world situations, he said, will depend on the quality of their safety engineering. We know how much companies spend on their fucking safety engineering, right? With billions of dollars in investments at stake, Koopman said, he wonders how the companies will balance safety decisions against cost concerns. Everything I see indicates they're trying to do the right thing, he said, but the devil's in the details. On the test track, reporters saw Aurora's semis avoid simulations of road obstacles, including pedestrians, a blown tire, and even a horse. But the trucks were only running at 35 miles per hour, 56 kilometers per hour, in a controlled environment with nothing unexpected happening. The trucks are being tested with human safety drivers on Texas freeway at speeds of 65 miles per hour, 105 kilometers per hour or higher. For you people, you know, who don't use the freedom units. On the track, the trucks spotted obstacles more than a quarter mile away and acted immediately to avoid them. Urmson said the truck's laser sensors can detect people walking on a highway at night far beyond the distance of headlights. We'll see. Since 2021, Aurora trucks have autonomously hauled freight over 1 million miles on public highways, but with human safety drivers in the cabs. There have only been 3 crashes, Urmson said, all of them caused by mistakes by human drivers and other vehicles. Crashes turned out to be minor with no injuries, and in each case, the company said the Aurora truck was able to safely pull to the side of the road. A federal database that started in June 2021 shows at least 13 crashes with other vehicles involving autonomous semis, including 3 involving Aurora. In all the cases, the crashes were caused by other vehicles changing lanes or rear-ending the trucks. Sometimes human safety drivers took over just before the crash. Aurora won't compromise safety, Urmson said, even if ensuring it might delay the timetable for achieving a profit. If we put a vehicle on the road that isn't sufficiently safe, that we aren't confident in the safety of, then it kills everything else, he said. It's a mad truck! Last month, what if somebody hacks the truck to become a 80,000-pound machine of death? Run away, it's death truck! You thought you were safe at home, but no! It's death truck! Boom! Right through the fucking walls. Just... man. Last month, when Ermson displayed the trucks to Wall Street Analysis in Pittsburgh, he said the publicly held company expects to turn a profit by late 2027 or early 2028. To meet that goal, Aurora must succeed in putting thousands of the trucks on the roads, hauling freight from terminal to terminal and collecting a per-mile charge from customers. The company's competitors, Plus AI, Gaddock, Kodiak Robotics, and others, also plans, to put driverless death trucks on the roads hauling freight for customers. Gaddock expects it to happen this year or the next. The others haven't set timetables. Don Burnett, CEO of Kodiak, said freeways are a better environment for autonomous vehicles than congested cities where ride-hailing robo-taxis have been running. There are fewer pedestrians and fewer unexpected things happen. Still, there are higher speeds and longer braking distances. In testing on highways with human backup drivers, Burnett said that Kodiak has never experienced a crash in which its trucks were at fault. At the end of the day, Burnett said, these trucks should be much safer than human drivers. Almost every year in the U.S., a tractor trailer plows into traffic that is stopped because of road construction, often causing deaths and injuries. By contrast, Burnett said that autonomous trucks pay attention all the time and are always watching 360 degrees. Perhaps so. But at a Bucky's Mega Convenience Store and gas station along Interstate 45 and about 35 miles south of Dallas, the prospect of a driverless semi struck a note of fear. It sounds like a disaster waiting to happen, said Kent Franz, a high school basketball coach in Chandelier, Oklahoma, who was traveling to Houston for a wedding. I've heard of driverless cars, Tesla, what have you, and the accidents they've been having, 18-wheelers, something that heavy, relying on technology that has proven it can be faulty, doesn't sound very comfortable to me. Patty Pierce, a retired accountant from Plano, Texas, said she'd be okay with the technology in about a decade. I don't want to be on the road with them right now, she said. I like the gadgets in my car, but I'm not sure the technology is good enough right now to have a truck that drives itself. No federal regulations specifically cover autonomous vehicles, Koopman of Carnegie Mellon noted. Old Carnegie Mellon Bank, huh? Most states have no such regulations either. Koopman said that the automated vehicle industry has persuaded many states to bar local governments from enacting such regulations. The result, he said, is that the public must trust the companies that are deploying autonomous semis. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, both part of the Federal Department of Transportation, lack authority to stop autonomous vehicles from going on the roads. If something goes wrong, though, they can require recalls or order trucks out of service. You can't expect the government to protect you out here, Koopman said. The company's going to decide when they think they're safe, and the only thing the regulator is going to do is judge them after the fact. For the past 5 years, the Motor Carrier Administration has been preparing safety standards for trucks with automated driving systems. The standards will govern inspections, maintenance, and the remote monitoring of the trucks, but it's unclear when the rules will emerge from the regulatory process. In the meantime, the autonomous semi companies say they can help address a truck driver shortage estimated by the industry to amount of 64,000 drivers. Yet there are no worries that autonomous trucks eventually will supplant human drivers and cost them their livelihoods. The Teamsters Union, which represents about 600,000 drivers, most of them truckers, is pushing state legislatures to require human drivers to monitor the self-driving system, contending that they are unsafe. A 2021 Transportation Department study concluded that the nationwide use of fully automated semis was years away, giving drivers time to transition to other transportation and logistics jobs that will be created. Probably not, though. Aurora's Ermson says he thinks driverless semis will complement the work already done by human drivers because many more goods will be moved for a growing population. If you're driving a truck today, he said, my expectation is you're going to be able to retire driving a truck. Sounds like some clown world shit, right? And a lot of shit going on in Memphis. Yep, sounds like clown world to me. Alright guys, so that's gonna be the end of the Grim Articles supplementary show for now, and we will see you guys next time with more articles. It was all AI this time, I'm sorry. Well, I mean, maybe... Well, we've got some game stuff. It's just I gotta go in the order that the articles are on my computer, all right? So, we're getting there. And it feels pretty damn good in Memphis right now. 77. Instead of the hell that it is right now here. They said, Grim, you're going to hell. I said, how much hotter is it going to be than it is right now? Because if it's not going to be that much hotter, I think I can handle it. The devil's going to walk in here and say, man, what the hell you got going on in here? It's like, I need some ice water.